can't believe she's going out with him, can you? It's like I don't know her anymore, and he's trouble. She slaps a hunk of clay on the table. Believe me, that creep is trouble with a capital T. I'd love to stay and chat, but my feet won't let me. I walk home instead of taking the bus. I unlock the front door and walk straight up to my room, across the rug, and into my closet without even taking off my backpack. When I close the closet door behind me, I bury my face into the clothes on the left side of the rack, clothes that haven't fit for years. I stuff my mouth with old fabric and scream until there are no sounds left under my skin. Home, sick. It is time for a mental health day. I need a day in pajamas, eating ice cream from the carton, painting my toenails, and enjoying trash TV. You have to plan ahead for a mental health day. I learned this from a conversation my mom had with her friend Kim. Mom always starts acting sick 48 hours ahead of time. She and Kim take mental health days together. They buy shoes and go to the movies. Cutting-edge adult delinquency. What is the world coming to? I don't eat any dinner or dessert, and I cough so much during the news my dad tells me to take some cough medicine. In the morning, I smear some mascara under my eyes so it looks like I haven't slept at all. Mom takes my temperature. Turns out I have a fever. Surprises even me. Her hand is cool, an island on my forehead. The words tumble out before I can stop them. Me. I don't feel well. Mom pats my back. Mom, you must be sick. You're talking. Even she can hear how bitchy that sounds. She clears her throat and tries again. Mom, I'm sorry. It's nice to hear your voice. Go back to bed. I'll bring up a tray before I leave. Do you want some ginger ale? I nod. Oprah, Sally Jesse, Jerry, and me. My fever is 102.2. Sounds like a radio station. Mom calls to remind me to drink a lot of fluids. I say, thank you, even though it hurts my throat. It's nice of her to call me. She promises to bring home popsicles. I hang up and snuggle into my couch nest with the remote. Click, click, click. If my life were a TV show, what would it be? If it were an after-school special, I would speak in front of an auditorium of my peers on how not to lose your virginity, or why seniors should be locked up, or my summer vacation, a drunken party, lies, and rape. Was I raped? Oprah. Let's explore that. You said no. He covered your mouth with his hand. You were 13 years old. It doesn't matter that you were drunk. Honey, you were raped. What a horrible, horrible thing for you to live through. Didn't you ever think of telling anyone? You can't keep this inside forever. Can someone get her a tissue? Sally Jesse. I want this boy held responsible. He is to blame for this attack. You do know it was an attack, don't you? It was not your fault. I want you to listen to me. Listen to me. Listen to me. It was not your fault. This boy was an animal. Jerry. Was it love? No. Was it lust? No. Was it tenderness, sweetness, the first time they talk about in magazines? No, 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 no. Speak up, Matilda. Melinda. I can't hear you. My head is killing me. My throat is killing me. My stomach bubbles with toxic waste. I just want to sleep. A coma would be nice, or amnesia. Anything just to get rid of this. These thoughts, whispers in my mind. Did he rape my head, too? I take 2 Tylenol and eat a bowl of pudding. Then I watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and fall asleep. A trip to the neighborhood of make-believe would be nice. Maybe I could stay with Daniel Striped Tiger in his treehouse. Real spring. May is finally here, and it has stopped raining. Good thing, too. The mayor of Syracuse was about to put out a call for a guy named Noah. The sun appears butter yellow, and so warm it coaxes tulips out of the crusty mud. A miracle. Our yard is a mess. All our neighbors have these great magazine cover yards with flowers that match their shutters and expensive white rocks that border fresh mounds of mulch. Ours has green bushes that just about cover the front windows and lots of dead leaves. Mom is already gone. Saturday is the biggest selling day of the week at Efforts. Dad snores upstairs. I put on old jeans and unearth a rake from the back of the garage. I start on the leaves, suffocating the bushes. I bet Dad hasn't cleaned them out for years. They look harmless and dry on top, but under that top layer they're wet and slimy. White mold snakes from one leaf to the next. The leaves stick together like floppy pages in a decomposing book. I rake a mountain into the front yard and there are still more, like the earth pukes up leaf gunk when I'm not looking. I have to fight the bushes. They snag the tines of the rake and hold them. They don't like me cleaning out all that rot. It takes an hour. Finally, the rake scrapes its metal fingernails along damp brown dirt. I get down on my knees to reach behind and drag out the last leaves. Ms. Keene would be proud of me. I observe. Worms caught in the sun squirm for cover. Pale green shoots of something alive have been struggling under the leaves. As I watch, they straighten to face the sun. I swear I can see them grow. The garage door opens and Dad backs out the Jeep. He stops in the driveway when he sees me. He turns off the engine and gets out. I stand up and brush the dirt off my jeans. My palms are blistered and my arms are already sore from the raking. I can't tell if he's angry or not. Maybe he likes the front of his house looking like crap. Dad.
That's a lot of work.
Me.
Silence.
Dad.
I'll get some leaf bags at the store.
Me.
Silence.
We both stand there with our arms crossed, staring at the little baby plants trying to grow in the shade of the house-eating bushes. The sun goes behind a cloud and I shiver. I should have worn a sweatshirt. The wind rustles dead leaves still clinging to the oak branches by the street. All I can think of is that the rest of the leaves are gonna drop and I'll have to keep raking.
Dad. Looks a lot better. Cleaned out like that, I mean.
The wind blows again. The leaves tremble.
Dad. I suppose I should trim back the bushes. Of course, then you'd see the shutters and they need paint. And if I paint these shutters, I'll have to paint all the shutters and the trim needs work too, and the front door.
Me.
Silence.
Tree.
Hush, rustle, cheetah, cheetah, shh.
Dad turns to listen to the tree. I'm not sure what to do.
Dad. And that tree is sick. See how the branches on the left don't have any buds? I should call someone to take a look at it. Don't want it crashing into your room during a storm.
Thanks, Dad. Like I'm not already having a hard time sleeping. Worry number 64, flying tree limbs. I shouldn't have raked anything. Look what I started. I shouldn't have tried something new. I should have stayed in the house. Watched cartoons with a double-sized bowl of Cheerios. Should have stayed in my room. Stayed in my head.
Dad. I guess I'm going to the hardware store. Wanna come?
The hardware store. 7 acres of unshaven men and bright-eyed women in search of the perfect screwdriver, weed killer, volcanic gas grills. Noise. Lights. Kids running down the aisle with hatchets and axes and saw blades. People fighting about the right color to paint the bathroom. No thank you. I shake my head. I pick up the rake and start making the dead leaf pile neater. A blister pops and stains the rake handle like a tear. Dad nods and walks to the Jeep, keys jangling in his fingers. A mockingbird lands on a low oak branch and scolds me. I rake the leaves out of my throat.
Me.
Can you buy some seeds? Flower seeds?
Fault.
Our gym teacher, Ms. Connors, is teaching us to play tennis.
Tennis is the only sport that comes close to not being a total waste of time. Basketball would be great if all you had to do was shoot foul shots, but most of the time you're on the court with 9 other people bumping and shoving and running way too much. Tennis is more civilized. Only 2 people have to play, unless you play doubles, which I never do. The rules are simple. You get to catch your breath every few minutes, and you can work on your tan. I actually learned to play a couple of summers ago when my parents had a trial membership at a fitness club. Mom signed me up for lessons, and I played with Dad a few times before they figured the monthly dues were too expensive. Since I'm not a total spaz with the racket, Ms. Connors pairs me off with jock goddess Nicole to demonstrate the game to the rest of the class. I serve first, a nice shot with a little speed on it. Nicole hits it right back to me with a great backhand. We volley a bit back and forth. Then Ms. Connors blows her whistle to stop and explain the retarded scoring system in tennis, where the numbers don't make sense and love doesn't count for anything. Nicole serves next. She aces it, a perfect serve at about 90 miles an hour that kisses the court just inside the line before I can move. Ms. Connors tells Nicole she's awesome, and Nicole smiles. I do not smile. I'm ready for her second serve, and I hit it right back down her throat. Ms. Connors says something nice to me, and Nicole adjusts the strings on her racket. My serve. I bounce the ball a few times. Nicole bounces on the balls of her feet. She isn't fooling around anymore. Her pride is at stake, her womanhood. She's not about to be beat by some weirdo, hush-quiet delinquent who used to be her friend. Ms. Connors tells me to hit the ball. I slam into the ball, sending it right to Nicole's mouth, grinning behind her custom purple mouth guard. She twists out of the way. Ms. Connors. Fault! Giggles from the class. A foot fault. Wrong foot forward, toe over the line. I get a second chance. Another civilized aspect of tennis. I bounce the yellow ball. 1, 2, 3. Up in the air like releasing a bird or an apple, then arcing my arm, rotate shoulder, bring down the power and the anger, and don't forget to aim. My racket takes on a life of its own, a bolt of energy. It crashes down on the ball, bulleting it over the net. The ball explodes on the court, leaving a crater before Nicole can blink. It blows past her and hits the fence so hard it rattles. No one laughs. No fault. I score a point. Nicole wins eventually, but not by much. Everybody else whines about their blisters. I have calluses on my hands from yard work. I'm tough enough to play and strong enough to win. Maybe I can get Dad to practice with me a few times. It would be the only glory of a really sucky year if I could beat someone at something. Yearbooks. The yearbooks have arrived. Everyone seems to understand this ritual but me. You hunt down every person who looks vaguely familiar and get them to write in your yearbook that the two of you are best friends and you'll never forget each other and remember blank class, fill in the blank, and have a great summer. Stay sweet. I watch some kids ask the cafeteria ladies to sign their books. What do they write? Hope your chicken patties never bleed? Or maybe, may your jello always wiggle? The cheerleaders have obtained some sort of special exemption to roam the hall in a pack with pens in hand to seek out autographs of staff and students. I catch a whiff of competitive juices when they float past me. They are counting signatures. The appearance of the yearbook clears up another high school mystery: why all the popular girls put up with the disgusting habits of Todd Ryder. He is a pig. Greasy, sleazy, foul-mouthed, and unwashed, he'll make a great addition to a state college fraternity. But the popular kids kissed up to him all year. Why? Todd Ryder is the yearbook photographer. Flip through the pages and see who is in his favor. Be nice to Todd, and he'll take pictures of you that should have a modeling agency calling your house any day now. Snub Todd, and you'll look like a trailer park refugee having a bad hair day. If I ran a high school, I would include stuff like this in the first day indoctrination. I hadn't understood the power of Todd. He snapped one picture of me, walking away from the camera wearing my dumpy winter coat, my shoulders up around my ears. I will not be buying a yearbook. Hair Woman No More. Hair Woman got a buzz cut. Her hair is half an inch long, a new crop of head fur, short and spiky. It's black, no fake orange at all. And she got new glasses, purple-rimmed bifocals that hang from a beaded chain. I don't know what caused this. Has she fallen in love? Did she get a divorce? Move out of her parents' basement? You never think about teachers having parents, but they must. Some kids say she did it to confuse us while we were working on our final essay. I'm not sure. We have a choice. We can write about symbolism in the comics or how story changed my life. I think something else is going on. I'm thinking she found a good shrink, or maybe she published that novel she's been writing since the earth cooled. I wonder if she'll be teaching summer school. Little Writing on the Wall. Ivy is sitting at my art table with four uncapped colored markers sticking out of her bun. I stand up, she turns her head, and bingo, I've got a rainbow on my shirt. She apologizes 100 million times. If it were anyone else, I would figure they did it on purpose. But Ivy and me have sort of been friendly the last few weeks. I don't think she was trying to be mean. Mr. Freeman lets me go to the bathroom, where I try to scrub the stains. I must look like a dog chasing its tail, twisting and twirling, trying to see the stains on my back in the mirror. The door swings open. It's Ivy. I raise my hand as she opens her mouth. Don't say it anymore. I know you're sorry. It was an accident. She points to the pen still stuck in her bun. I put the caps on. Mr. Freeman made me. Then he sent me in here to see how you're doing. He's worried about me? He wants to make sure you don't pull a disappearing act. You've been known to wander off. Not in the middle of class. There's a first time for everything. Go in the stall and hand over your shirt. You can't wash it while you're wearing it. I think Principal should have his office in the restroom. Maybe then he'd hire somebody to keep it clean, or an armed guard to stop people from plugging up the toilet, smoking, or writing on the walls. Who is Alexandra? I ask. I don't know any Alexandras, Ivy's voice says above the rush of water in the sink. There might be an Alexandra in 10th grade. Why? According to this, she has pissed off a whole bunch of people. One person wrote in huge letters that she's a whore, and all these others added on little details. She slept with this guy, she slept with that guy, she slept with those guys all at the same time. For a 10th grader, she sure gets around. Ivy doesn't answer. I peer through the crack between the door and the wall. She opens the soap container and dips my shirt in it. Then she scrubs the stains. I shiver. I'm standing in a bra, not a terribly clean bra, and it is freezing in here. Ivy holds the shirt up to the light, frowns, and scrubs some more. I want to take a deep breath, but it smells too bad. Remember what you said about Andy Evans being big trouble, I say. Yeah. Why did you say that? She rinses the soap from the shirt. He has such a reputation. He's only after one thing, and if you believe the rumors, he'll get it no matter what. She wrings the water out of the shirt. The sound of dripping water echoes off the tiles. Rachel is going out with him, I say. I know. Just add that to the list of stupid things she's done this year. What does she say about him? We don't really talk, I say. She's a bitch, that's what you mean. She thinks she's too good for the rest of us. Ivy punches the silver button on the hand dryer and holds up the shirt. I reread the graffiti. I love Derek. Mr. Neck bites. I hate this place. Syracuse rocks. Syracuse sucks. Lists of hotties, lists of jerks, list of ski resorts in Colorado everyone dreams about, phone numbers that have been scratched out with keys, entire conversations scrolled down the bathroom stall. It's like a community chat room, a metal newspaper. I ask Ivy to hand over one of her pens. She does. I think you're gonna have to bleach this thing, she says, and hands over the shirt as well. I put it over my head. It's still damp. What did you want the marker for? I hold the cap in my teeth. I start another subject thread on the wall. Guys to stay away from. The first entry is the beast himself. Andy Evans. I swing open the door with a flourish. Ta-da! I point to my handiwork. Ivy grins. Prom preparation. The climax of mating season is nearly upon us. The senior prom. They should cancel school this week. The only things we're learning are who's going with who. Whom? Must ask Hairwoman. Who bought a dress in Manhattan? Which limo company won't tell if you drink? The most expensive tux place? And on and on and on. The gossip energy alone could power the building's electricity for the rest of the marking period. The teachers are pissed. Kids aren't handing in homework because they have appointments at the tanning salon. Andy Beast asked Rachel to go with him. I can't believe her mother is letting her go. But maybe she agreed because they're going to double with Rachel's brother and his date. Rachel is one of the rare ninth graders invited to the senior prom. Her social stock has soared. She must not have gotten my note, or maybe she decided to ignore it. Maybe she showed it to Andy and they had a good laugh. Maybe she won't get in the trouble I did. Maybe he'll listen to her. Maybe I had better stop thinking about it before I go nuts. Heather has come belly crawling for help. My mother can't believe it. A living, breathing friend on the front porch for her maladjusted daughter. I pry Heather out of Mom's claws, and we retreat to my room. My stuffed rabbits crawl out of their burrows, noses a-wiggling, pink bunny, purple bunny, a gingham bunny from my grandma. They are as excited as my mother. Company. I can see the room through Heather's green-tinted contacts. She doesn't say anything, but I know she thinks it looks stupid. A baby room. All those toy rabbits. There must be 100 of them. Mom knocks on the door. She has cookies for us. I want to ask if she's feeling sick. I hand the bag to Heather. She takes one cookie and nibbles at its edges. I snarf 5 just to spite her. I lie on my bed, trapping the bunnies next to the wall. Heather delicately pushes a pile of dirty clothes off my chair and perches her skinny butt on it. I wait. She launches into a sob story about how much she hates being a Martha drone. Indentured servitude would be better. They are just taking advantage of her, bossing her around. Her grades are all the way down to B's because of the time she has to spend waiting on her senior Marthas. Her father is thinking about taking a job in Dallas, and she wouldn't mind moving again, nope, not one bit, because she's heard kids in the South aren't as stuck up as they are here. I eat more cookies. I'm fighting the shock of having a guest in my room. I almost kick her out because it's going to hurt too much when my room is empty again. Heather says I was smart. So smart, Mel, to blow off the stupid group. This whole year has been horrible. I hated every single day, but I didn't have the guts to get out like you did. She completely ignores the fact that I was never in, and that she dumped me, banished me from even the shadows of Martha glory. I feel like any minute a guy in a lavender suit will burst into the room with a microphone and bellow, "Another alternate reality moment brought to you by adolescence." I still can't figure out why she's here. She licks a crumb off her cookie and gets to the point. She and the other junior Marthas are required to decorate the Route 11 Holiday Inn ballroom for the prom. Meg and Emily and Siobhan can't assist, of course. They have to get their nails painted and their teeth whitened. The privileged, the few, the junior Marthas have been laid waste by mononucleosis, leaving Heather all by herself. She is desperate. Me. You have to decorate the whole thing by Saturday night? Heather. Actually, we can't start until 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon because of some stupid meeting of Chrysler salesmen. But I know we can do it. I'm asking other kids, too. Do you know anyone who could help? Frankly, no, I don't. But I chew and try to look thoughtful. Heather takes this to mean that, yes, I'd be happy to help her. She bounces out of the chair. Heather, I knew you would help. You're great. Tell you what, I owe you. I owe you a big one. How about next week I come over and help you redecorate? Me. Silence. Heather, didn't you tell me once how much you hated your room? Well, now I see why. It would be so depressing just to wake up here every morning. We'll clear out all this junk. She kicks a chenille bunny who was sleeping in my robe on the floor. And get rid of those curtains. Maybe you could go shopping with me. Can you get your mom's American Express? She yanks my curtains to one side. Let's not forget to wash those windows. Seafoam green and sage. That's what you should look for. Classic and feminine. Me. No. Heather. You want something richer like an eggplant or cobalt? Me. No, I haven't decided on colors yet. That's not what I mean. I mean, no, I won't help you. She collapses into the chair again. You have to help me. Me. No, I don't. Heather. But why? I bite my lip. Does she want to know the truth? That she's self-centered and cold? That I hope all the seniors yell at her? That I hate seafoam green? And besides, it's none of her business if my windows are dirty. I feel tiny button noses against my back. Bunnies say to be kind. Lie. Me. I have plans. The tree guy is coming to work on the oak out front. I have to dig in my garden, and besides, I know what I want to do in here, and it doesn't include eggplant. Most of it is half true. Half planned. Heather scowls. I open the dirty window to let in fresh air. It brushes my hair back off my face. I tell Heather she has to leave. I need to clean. She crams her cookie in her mouth and does not say goodbye to my mother. What a snot. Communication 101. I'm on a roll. I'm rocking. I don't know what it is. Standing up to Heather, planting marigold seeds, or maybe the look on Mom's face when I asked if she would let me redecorate my room. The time has come to arm wrestle some demons. Too much sun after a Syracuse winter does strange things to your head. Makes you feel strong. Even if you aren't. I must talk to Rachel. I can't do it in algebra, and the beast waits for her outside English. But we have study hall at the same time. Bingo. I find her squinting at a book with small type in the library. She's too vain for glasses. I instruct my heart not to bolt down the hall and sit next to her. No nuclear bombs detonate. A good start. She looks at me without expression. I try on a smile, size medium. Hey, I say. Hmm, she responds. No lip curling. No rude hand gestures. So far, so good. I look at the book she's copying, word for word, from. It's about France. Me. Homework? Rachel. Kind of. She taps her pencil on the table. I'm going to France this summer with the International Club. We have to do a report to prove we're serious. Me. That's great. I mean, you've always talked about traveling, ever since we were kids. Remember when we were in fourth grade and we read Heidi and we tried to melt cheese in your fireplace? We laugh a little too loudly. It's not really that funny, but we're both nervous. A librarian points his finger at us. Bad students. Bad, bad students. No laughing. I look at her notes. They are lousy. A few facts about Paris, decorated with an Eiffel Tower doodle, hearts, and the initials RB and AE. Gack. Me. So you're really going out with him? With Andy? I heard about the prom. Rachel grins, honey slow. She stretches like the mention of his name wakes her muscles and makes her tummy jump. "He's great," she says. "He's just so awesome and gorgeous and yummy." She stops. She is talking to the village leper. Me. What are you going to do when he goes to college? Ugh, an arrow to her soft spot. Clouds across the sun. I can't think about that. It hurts too much. He said he was going to get his parents to let him transfer back here. He could go to LaSalle or Syracuse. I'll wait for him. Give me a break. Me. You've been going out for, like, what, 2 weeks, three? A cold front blows across the library. She straightens up and snaps shut the cover of her notebook. Rachel, what do you want, anyway? Before I can answer, the librarian pounces. We are welcome to continue our conversation in the principal's office, or we can stay and be quiet. Our choice. I take out my notebook and write to Rachel.
It's nice to talk to you again. I'm sorry we couldn't be friends this year.
I pass the notebook to her. She melts a bit around the edges and writes back.
Yeah, I know. So who do you like? No one, really. My lab partner is kinda nice, but like a friend-friend, not a boyfriend or anything.
Rachel nods wisely. She's dating a senior. She is so beyond these freshman friend-friend relationships. She's in charge again. Time for me to suck up.
Are you still mad at me?
I write. She doodles a quick lightning bolt.
No, I guess not. It was a long time ago.
She stops and draws a spiraling circle. I stand on the edge and wonder if I'm going to fall in.
The party was a little wild, she continues. But it was dumb to call the cops. We could have just left.
She slides the notebook over to me. I draw a spiraling circle in the opposite direction to Rachel's. I could leave it like this, stop in the middle of the highway. She's talking to me again. All I have to do is keep the dirt hidden and walk arm in arm with her into the sunset. She reaches back to fix her hair scrunchie. RB and AE is written in red pen on the inside of her forearm. Breathe in. 1, 2, 3. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3. I force my hand to relax.
I didn't call the cops to break up the party,
I write.
I called.
I put the pencil down. I pick it up again.
Them because some guy raped me. Under the trees. I didn't know what to do.
She watches as I carve out the words. She leans closer to me. I write more.
I was stupid and drunk and didn't know what was happening, and then he hurt.
I scribble that out.
Raped me. When the police came, everyone was screaming, and I was just too scared. So I cut through some backyards and walked home.
I push the notebook back to her. She stares at the words. She pulls her chair around to my side of the table.
Oh my God, I am so sorry, she writes. Why didn't you tell me? I couldn't tell anybody. Does your mom know?
I shake my head. Tears pop up from some hidden spring.
Damn.
I sniff and wipe my eyes on my sleeve.
Did you get pregnant? Did he have a disease? Oh my God, are you okay? No, I don't think so. Yes, I'm okay. Well, kinda.
Rachel writes in a heavy, fast hand.
Who did it?
I turn the page.
Andy Evans.
Liar! She stumbles out of her chair and grabs her books off the table. I can't believe you. You're jealous. You're a twisted little freak, and you're jealous that I'm popular and I'm going to the prom, and so you lie to me like this. And you sent me that note, didn't you? You are so sick. She spins to take on the librarian. "I'm going to the nurse," she states. "I think I'm going to throw up." Chat room. I'm standing in the lobby looking at the buses. I don't want to go home. I don't want to stay here. I got my hopes up halfway through the conversation with Rachel. That was my mistake. It was like smelling the perfect Christmas feast and having the door slammed in your face, leaving you alone in the cold. Melinda! I hear my name. Great, now I'm hearing things. Maybe I should ask the guidance counselor for a therapist or a nosy shrink. I don't say anything and I feel awful. I tell somebody and I feel worse. I'm having trouble finding a middle ground. Someone touches my arm gently. Melinda? It's Ivy. Can you take the late bus? I want to show you something. We walk together. She leads me to the bathroom, the one where she washed my shirt, which, by the way, still has traces of her markers, even after the bleach. She points to the stall. Take a look. Guys to stay away from. Andy Evans. He's a creep. He's a bastard. Stay away. He should be locked up. He thinks he's all that. Call the cops. What's the name of that drug they give perverts so they can't get it up? Dipro something. He should get it every morning in his orange juice. I went out with him to the movies. He tried to get his hands down my pants during the previews. There's more. Different pens, different handwriting, conversations between some writers, arrows to longer paragraphs. It's better than taking out a billboard. I feel like I can fly. Pruning. I wake the next morning, Saturday, to the sound of a chainsaw, the noise biting right through my ears and splintering my plans of sleeping in. I peer out the window. The arborists, the tree guys Dad called to trim the oak's dead branches, stand at the base of the tree, one guy revving up the chainsaw like it's a sports car, the other giving the tree the once-over. I go downstairs for breakfast. Watching cartoons is out of the question. I make a cup of tea and join Dad and a group of neighborhood kids watching the show from the driveway. One arborist monkeys his way into the pale green canopy, then hauls up the chainsaw, turned off, at the end of a thick rope. He sets to work pruning the dead wood like a sculptor. The chainsaw gnaws through the oak, branches crashing to the ground. The air swirls with sawdust. Sap oozes from the open sores on the trunk. He is killing the tree. He'll only leave a stump. The tree is dying. There's nothing to do or say. We watch in silence as the tree crashes piece by piece to the damp ground. The chainsaw murderer swings down with a grin. He doesn't even care. A little kid asks my father why that man is chopping down the tree. Dad, he's not chopping it down. He's saving it. Those branches were long dead from disease. All plants are like that. By cutting off the damage, you make it possible for the tree to grow again. You watch. By the end of summer, this tree will be the strongest on the block. I hate it when my father pretends to know more than he does. He sells insurance. He's not a forest ranger, wise in the way of the woods. The arborist fires up the mulcher at the back of their truck. I've seen enough. I grab my bike and take off. The first stop is the gas station to pump up my tires. I can't remember the last time I rode. The morning is warm, a lazy, slow Saturday. The parking lot at the grocery store is full. A couple of softball games are being played behind the elementary school, but I don't stop to watch. I ride up the hill past Rachel's house, past the high school. The downside is a fast, easy coast. I dare myself to lift my hands off the handlebars. As long as I'm moving fast enough, the front wheel holds steady. I turn left and left again, following the hills down without realizing where I'm heading. Some part of me has planned this. A devious internal compass pointed to the past. The lane isn't familiar until I glimpse the barn. I squeeze the brakes hard and struggle to control the bike on the gravel shoulder. A wind rips through the phone wires overhead. A squirrel fights to retain her balance. There are no cars in the driveway. Rogers is painted on the mailbox. A basketball hoop hangs off the side of the barn. I don't remember that, but it would have been hard to see it in the dark. I walk my bike along the back edge of the property to where the trees swallow the sun. My bike leans into a collapsing fence. I sink to the shade-cold ground. My heart thuds as if I were still pedaling up the hill. My hands shake. It is a completely normal place, out of sight of the barn and house, close enough to the road that I can hear cars passing. Fragments of acorn shells litter the ground. You could bring a kindergarten class here for a picnic. I think about lying down. No, that would not do. I crouch by the trunk, my fingers stroking the bark, seeking a braille code, a clue, a message on how to come back to life after my long, under-snowed dormancy. I have survived. I am here. Confused, screwed up, but here. So how can I find my way? Is there a chainsaw of the soul? An axe I can take to my memories or fears? I dig my fingers into the dirt and squeeze. A small, clean part of me waits to warm and burst through the surface. Some quiet Melinda girl I haven't seen in months. That is the seed I will care for. Prowling. When I get home, it's time for lunch. I make 2 egg salad sandwiches and drink an enormous glass of milk. I eat an apple and put my dishes in the dishwasher. It's only 1 o'clock. I suppose I should clean the kitchen and vacuum, but the windows are open and robins sing on the front lawn, where a pile of mulch with my name on it is waiting. Mom is impressed when she drives up at dinner time. The front lawn is raked, edged, mowed, and the bushes are mulched. I'm not even breathing hard. Mom helps me carry the plastic deck furniture up from the basement, and I scrub it with bleach. Dad brings home pizza, and we eat on the deck. Mom and Dad drink iced tea, and there's no biting or snarling. I clear the dishes and throw the pizza box in the trash. I lie down on the couch to watch TV, but my eyes close and I'm out. When I wake up, it's past midnight, and someone has covered me with an afghan. The house is quiet, dark. Cool breeze slides in between the curtains. I am wide awake. I feel itchy inside my skin. Antsy, that's what my mother would call it. I can't sit still. I have to do something. My bike is still leaning against the prune tree in the front yard. I ride. Up and down, across and diagonal, I pedal my sore legs through the streets of a suburb mostly sleeping. Some late-night TVs flicker from bedroom windows. A few cars are parked in front of the grocery store. I imagine people mopping the floors, restacking loaves of bread. I coast by the houses of people I used to know. Heather, Nicole. Turn the corner, downshift, and pedal harder, up the hill to Rachel's house. The lights are on, her parents waiting for the fairy prom-goers to come home. I could knock on the door and ask them if they want to play cards or something. Nah. I ride like I have wings. I am not tired. I don't think I'll ever have to sleep again. Post-prom. By Monday morning, the prom is legend. The drama, the tears, the passion. Why hasn't anyone made a television show out of this yet? The total damage included 1 stomach pumped, 3 breakups of long-term relationships, 1 lost diamond earring, 4 outrageous hotel room parties, and 5 matching tattoos allegedly decorating the behinds of the senior class officers. The guidance counselors are celebrating the lack of fatal accidents. Heather is not at school today. Everybody is griping about her lame decorations. I bet she calls in sick the rest of the year.
Heather should run away and join the Marines immediately. They'll be much sweeter to her than a swarm of angry Marthas. Rachel is in her glory. She ditched Andy in the middle of the prom. I'm trying to piece the story together from grapevine gossip. They say she and Andy argued during a slow song. They say he was all over her with his hands in his mouth. While they danced, he was grinding against her and she backed off. The song ended and she swore at him. They say she was ready to slap him, but she didn't. He looked around, all innocent-like, and she stomped over to her exchange student buddies. Ended up dancing the night away with a kid from Portugal. They say Andy's been really pissed off ever since. He got wicked drunk at a party and passed out in a bowl of bean dip. Rachel burned everything he ever gave her and left the ashes in front of his locker. His friends laughed at him. Except for the gossip, there's no real point in coming to school. Well, there are final exams, but it's not like they're going to make any difference to my grades. We have, what, 2 more weeks of classes? Sometimes I think high school is one long hazing activity. If you're tough enough to survive this, they'll let you become an adult. I hope it's worth it.
Pray.
I'm waiting for the clock to end the daily torture by algebra session when, whammo, a thought slams into my head. I don't want to hang out in my little hidey hole anymore. I look behind me, half expecting to see a sniggering back row guy who beamed me with an eraser. Nope, the back row is struggling to stay awake. It was definitely an idea that hit me. I don't feel like hiding anymore. A breeze from the open window blows my hair back and tickles my shoulders. This is the first day warm enough for a sleeveless shirt. Feels like summer. After class, I trail behind Rachel. Andy is waiting for her. She won't even look at him. The kid from Portugal is now Rachel's numero uno. Ha! Double ha! Serves you right, you scum. Kids stare at Andy, but nobody stops to talk. He follows Greta Ingrid and Rachel down the hall. I am a few steps behind him. Greta Ingrid spins around and tells Andy exactly what he should do to himself. Impressive! Her language skills have really improved this year. I'm ready to do a victory dance. I head for my closet after school. I want to take the poster of Maya Angelou home, and I'd like to keep some of my tree pictures and my turkey bone sculpture. The rest of the stuff can stay, as long as it doesn't have my name on it. Who knows? Some other kids may need a safe place to run to next year. Haven't been able to get rid of the smell. I leave the door cracked open a bit so I can breathe. It's hard to get the tree pictures off the walls without tearing them. The day is getting hotter and there's no circulation in here. I open the door wider. Who's gonna come by now? By this point in the year, teachers take off faster than students when the final bell rings. The only people left are a few teams scattered on the practice fields. I don't know what to do with a comforter. It's really too ratty to take home. I should have gone to my locker first and gotten my backpack. I forgot about the books that are in here. I fold the comforter and set it on the floor, turn out the light, and head out the door for my locker. Somebody slams into my chest and knocks me back into the closet. The light flicks on and the door closes. I am trapped with Andy Evans. He stares at me without talking. He is not as tall as my memories, but is still loathsome. The light bulb throws shadows under his eyes. He is made out of slabs of stone and gives off a smell that makes me afraid I'll wet my pants. He cracks his knuckles. His hands are enormous. Andy Beast. You have a big mouth, you know it? Rachel blew me off at the prom, giving me some bullshit story about how I raped you. You know that's a lie. I never raped anybody. I don't have to. You wanted it just as bad as I did,
but your feelings got hurt, so you started spreading lies, and now every girl in school is talking about me like I'm some kind of pervert. You've been spreading that bullshit story for weeks. What's wrong, ugly? You jealous? Can't get a date? The words fall like nails on the floor, hard, pointed. I try to walk around him. He blocks my way. Oh, no, you're not going anywhere. You really screwed things up for me. He reaches behind and locks the door. Click. Me. Silence. You are one strange bitch, know that? A freak. I can't believe anyone listened to you. He grabs my wrists. I try to pull them back, and he squeezes so tight it feels like my bones are splintering. He pins me against the closed door. Maya Angelou looks at me. She tells me to make some noise. I open my mouth and take a deep breath. Beast. You're not gonna scream. You didn't scream before. You liked it. You're jealous that I took out your friend and not you. I think I know what you want. His mouth is on my face. I twist my head. His lips are wet. His teeth knock against my cheekbone. I pull my arms again, and he slams his body against mine. I have no legs. My heart wobbles. His teeth are on my neck. The only sound I can make is a whimper. He fumbles to hold both my wrists in one hand. He wants a free hand. I remember. Metal hands. Hot knife hands. No. A sound explodes from me. No. I follow the sound, pushing off the wall, pushing Andy Evans off balance, stumbling into the broken sink. He curses and turns, his fist coming. An explosion in my head and blood in my mouth. He hit me. I scream. Why aren't the walls falling? I'm screaming loud enough to make the whole school crumble. I grab for anything. My potpourri bowl. I throw it at him. It bounces to the floor. My books. He swears again. The door's locked. He grabs me, pulls me away from the door, one hand over my mouth, one hand around my throat. He leans me against the sink. My fists mean nothing to him. Little rabbit paws thumping harmlessly. His body crushes me. My fingers wave overhead, looking for a branch, a limb, something to hang on to. A block of wood, the base of my turkey bone sculpture. I slam it against Maya's poster. I hear a crunch. It doesn't hear. It breathes like a dragon. Its hand leaves my throat, attacks my body. I hit the wood against the poster, and the mirror under it again. Shards of glass slip down the wall and into the sink. It pulls away from me, puzzled. I reach in and wrap my fingers around a triangle of glass. I hold it to Andy Evans' neck. He freezes. I push just hard enough to raise one drop of blood. He raises his arms over his head. My hand quivers. I want to insert the glass all the way through his throat. I want to hear him scream. I look up. I see the stubble on his chin, a fleck of white in the corner of his mouth. His lips are paralyzed. He cannot speak. That's good enough. Me. I said no. He nods. Someone is pounding on the door. I unlock it and the door swings open. Nicole is there, along with the lacrosse team. Sweaty, angry, their sticks held high. Someone peels off and runs for help. Final cut. Mr. Freeman is refusing to hand his grades in on time. They should have been in 4 days before the end of school, but he didn't see the sense in that. So I'm staying after school on the very, very last day for one last try at getting my tree right. Mr. Freeman is covering the grade wall with a mural.
He hasn't touched the line with my name, but he eliminated everything else with a roller brush and fast-drying white paint. He hums as he mixes colors on his palette. He wants to paint a sunrise. Summer vacation voices bubble through the open window. School is nearly over. The hall echoes with slamming lockers and shrieks of, "I'm gonna miss you! Got my number?" I turn up the radio. My tree is definitely breathing. Little shallow breaths like it just shot up through the ground this morning. This one is not perfectly symmetrical. The bark is rough. I try to make it look as if initials had been carved in it a long time ago. One of the lower branches is sick. If this tree really lives someplace, that branch better drop soon so it doesn't kill the whole thing. Roots knob out of the ground, and the crown reaches for the sun, tall and healthy. The new growth is the best part. Lilac flows through the open windows with a few lazy bees. I carve and Mr. Freeman mixes orange and red to get the right shade of sunrise. Tires squeal out of the parking lot, another sober student farewell. I'm staring summer school in the face, so there's no real hurry. But I want to finish this tree. A couple of seniors stroll in. Mr. Freeman hugs them carefully, either because of the paint on him or because teachers hugging students can make for big trouble. I shake my bangs down in front of my face and watch through my hair. They chat about New York City, where the girls are going to college. Mr. Freeman writes down some phone numbers and names of restaurants. He says he has plenty of friends in Manhattan and that they should meet for brunch some Sunday. The girls, the women, hop up and down and squeal. I can't believe it's really happening. One of them is Amber Cheerleader. Go figure. The seniors look my way before they leave. One girl, not the cheerleader, nods her head and says, "Way to go. I hope you're okay." With hours left in the school year, I have suddenly become popular. Thanks to the big mouths on the lacrosse team, everybody knew what happened before sundown. Mom took me to the hospital to stitch up the cut on my hand. When we got home, there was a message on the machine from Rachel. She wants me to call her. My tree needs something. I walk over to the desk and take a piece of brown paper and a finger of chalk. Mr. Freeman talks about art galleries, and I practice birds. Little dashes of color on paper. It's awkward with the bandage on my hand, but I keep trying. I draw them without thinking. Flight, flight, feather, wing. Water drips on the paper, and the birds bloom in the light, their feathers expanding promise. It happened. There is no avoiding it, no forgetting. No running away or flying or burying or hiding. Andy Evans raped me in August when I was drunk and too young to know what was happening. It wasn't my fault. He hurt me. It wasn't my fault. And I'm not going to let it kill me. I can grow. I look at my homely sketch. It doesn't need anything. Even through the river in my eyes, I can see that. It isn't perfect, and that makes it just right. The last bell rings. Mr. Freeman comes to my table. Mr. Freeman. Time's up, Melinda. Are you ready? I hand over the picture. He takes it in his hands and studies it. I sniff again and wipe my eyes on my arm. The bruises are vivid, but they will fade. Mr. Freeman. No crying in my studio. It ruins the supplies. Salt, you know, saline, etches like acid. He sits on the stool next to me and hands back my tree. You get an A+. You worked hard at this. He hands me the box of tissues. You've been through a lot, haven't you? The tears dissolve the last block of ice in my throat. I feel the frozen stillness melt down through the inside of me, dripping shards of ice that vanish in a puddle of sunlight on the stained floor. Words float up. Me. Let me tell you about it. This is Mandy Siegfried. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Speak by Lori Haltz Anderson. This program was produced and directed by Karen Perlman. Copyright 1999 by Lori Haltz Anderson. Production copyright 2000, Random House Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.